Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Good evening, this is Bonnie Kay, and I'm not sure if we're here or not, but I am waiting for my guest, Patsy Ray, who was here, but I guess she left, so let's see if she'll come back. We're having trouble tonight with Blog Talk Radio, but I'm going to try to end this episode and start again. So stand by if you're listening. Hi, this is Bonnie Kay. I don't know whether the show is really on or not, because Blog Talk Radio is having trouble this evening, so I really couldn't tell you. But hopefully, like I say, we'll wait a few minutes and see what happens. I'll play some music in the meantime, and let's see if it goes through. Music's not going through, so I'm going to have to assume that this is not working correctly and sign off. I'm really sorry in case you're listening. This is a Blog Talk Radio blunder. Okay, I'll try again. Okay, let's see.
Yes, are you there?
I am here. I'm having so much trouble with
I know, and I could hear you on my speaker just a little bit ago from the computer, so I'm guessing we're on the air. I can test it again if you'd like.
No, I'll play a song and see if it plays, and we'll know. How's that? Stevie knows this song, Patsy. You ready?
Okay.
Let's see if I can get it to go. Nope, so now I'm thinking maybe it's just not working. But all right. Is there any way for us to test it?
I can turn on my speaker again and see if I'm hearing you over the computer.
So I'm thinking maybe it's just working.
Yes,
okay.
I'm hearing you. Yep,
right.
You're talking.
Well,
okay.
Okay. Let's introduce the show.
Okay, it sounds like it's a few minutes behind us, and maybe that's the way it normally works. So.
Absolutely does. So we'll welcome everybody who's listening to this broadcast. Sorry for the delays. There's problems with Blog Talk Radio tonight. And I know that because I had an earlier show and I had problems with them also. I put in a ticket. So thank you, everybody, for your patience. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. And each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And if you have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646 216-4893. Or please feel free to email me at bondk@aol.com if you don't feel like calling into the radio. And I'm more than happy to listen to any of your comments that you would like to make during this upcoming broadcast. Before I introduce my good friend and special guest tonight, Patsy Ray Dawson, I do want to make a few announcements. And first of all, this Wednesday I will be in New York City. We're meeting with a nice group of our women there. So if you're listening and you are interested in this, please email me immediately at bondk@aol.com. The dinner will be at 6:30 in Midtown, so if you would like to be part of that group, we'd love to see you and meet you and bond with you and talk and heal and do whatever we do when we get together. Also, in 2 weekends from now, we will be in Philadelphia at our Philadelphia Healing Retreat. It's going to be really a very big retreat for healing, so we'll have lots of healing action going on there. And we still have always room for one more. I don't put any number limits on it. We just have to do our best because we have a massive number of women coming. But the more that come, the more you learn from, the more you'll heal, the more friends you'll make, the more connections you make. And I think one of the big problems when we go through this is the fact that you feel so alone and isolated. And my goal is to make you feel not alone, not isolated, but to make you realize that there are millions of us out there all over the world, not just in this country, everywhere. And in fact, during my healing weekend in 2 weekends, I have women coming from Australia, England, Canada, California, a whole group from California, Texas, Florida, all over. So there are women who are in our situation everywhere. And my goal is to try to hook up women as much as possible to get the support that they need. So please, if you need this healing experience, just write to me at bondk@aol.com. And we also have our online support chat 3 times a week here in the United States, also on Monday nights in Europe and in England. We also have, you know, our radio show here, my monthly newsletters. If you're not on my newsletter list, please write to me and I'll put you right on there. So whatever it takes to make you feel connected so that you can move ahead, that's what my job is, that's what I'm here for, and that is my mission. Well, moving right along, I would like to introduce my special friend, who I've been so lucky in life to have a chance to actually meet. Because a lot of times in life you make friends and you really don't get to meet them. You just email them, talk on the telephone. But I actually had the wonderful pleasure of meeting my dear friend Patsy. Patsy, how are you?
I'm doing absolutely fabulous. Bonnie, how are you doing?
Well, I was a little scared that maybe I was having trouble with the radio show because you were the guest. And, you know, you're so controversial. And, you know, I think you have a lot more daggers flying your way than I have my way. And that really is good because I need somebody to take the pressure off of me.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
You know,
okay,
I only have the married gay male community after me. You have, like, half the Christian community after you.
Right, that's about true.
Yeah, I only have a few million people who want me out of the picture. You have millions. So, you know, that's why
yeah.
I thought maybe somebody was sabotaging you being on here tonight.
Well,
but
maybe not.
Hopefully.
So,
but
right,
I always feel
right.
You have God on your side, so, you know, I feel there will be hope. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been a few months since we've last talked, and
right,
I know that you always inspire our women when you come on here because, you know, it never fails that I have my Christian women who come to me, and, you know, these are good women who took vows and who said I do, and they meant it. And they thought that meant in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer. But they didn't exactly think for straight or for gay. But, you know, nevertheless, they're hanging in there because they felt this was the way God wanted it. And you've been such a light, these women, you know, over the last few years since we hooked up, in letting them know that, you know, this is not the way life was supposed to be. And that you've been doing Christian marriage counseling for how many years now?
It's over 40 years.
Wow. That's a long time. So you've had a lot of experience. You've written a lot of books. Right?
Right. And one thing I love about this age, I'm going to turn 68 next month. And one thing I love, well, thank you. One thing I love about this age is you can look back and you can see parallels and consistencies in your own life and in the lives of those you've influenced and kept in touch with, and you can just learn a lot. And I'm convinced one of the ways God wants us to learn is by hindsight. You know, he doesn't allow us to look into the future, and a lot of times our hindsight can teach us things so that we can see that certain activity is dangerous and that we shouldn't go down that route. But a lot of times we just have to learn things the hard way. And hindsight is the way I believe he has created us to learn and to stop and analyze and see what we can learn. So I'm excited about this age and the things that I am learning from being able to look back and draw conclusions. And I've told you before that I've, from reading your books and talking to you, I can look back at some of those early marriages that I worked with and see that we were dealing with a straight wife married to a homosexual. But back in the early 70s, who knew that? You know, that never entered our brain. That I had one woman I worked with, I think about her a lot. She had been married before to a heterosexual man who was very sexually active, and she was in her second marriage. The second husband was not sexually active at all, and she was continually comparing him to her first husband, but the thought that he might be gay never entered her brain. And when she was talking to me, it never entered my mind that that might be an issue for her either. And it wasn't until I started reading some of your, you know, your checklists for women who wonder. I thought, wow, who would have thought? And we didn't
think. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, Patsy, because you and I grew up pretty much in the same generation.
Right.
I mean, you're just a couple of years ahead of me. But even those couple of years made a big difference because you were more of a 50s girl. I was more of a 60s girl. And by the time I was growing up in the 60s, this country was changing. And especially I moved out to California back in 1967, 68, and there was a sexual revolution going on, and I did not grow up in a Christian environment. So I was very able to partake in those kind of activities. I wasn't fearing anything. But the point is that, you know, life was so different even from the 50s to the 60s. But
right.
Even then, we grew up with the expectations of when we marry somebody, even if we knew about gay, which, to be honest with you, I don't think people in the 50s really talked about it very much. By the time you were in the 60s and with the gay rights and, you know, gays coming out and wanting, you know, to have the same rights as everyone else, then you first started hearing about it. But why would we ever think that somebody gay would be able to marry and function as a heterosexual husband?
Yeah,
you know, I think
yeah.
We're really very hard on ourselves for thinking, why didn't we know this? Because we didn't know this, right?
Right, right. And, you know, and here's this woman who had been married to a heterosexual who was sexually very active. And, you know, two totally different marriages. And that thought never entered her mind that her second husband might be gay. And, of course, both of those people are now dead, and there's no, you know, I would just give anything if I could talk to her again. But it just was not part of the equation for solving the problem back then.
And especially according to the church. You know, back in those days, up until not too long ago, I don't think the church had much flexibility as far as homosexuality. You know, if you married somebody and you were gay because you thought you had to do it because the church would be damning you if you, you know, were gay.
Right, right.
Then you would just get married and do your best to try to be a straight man, hoping that you could keep those, you know, pressures down and hoping you could keep those feelings down. But, you know, we've seen over the years, and I don't know, I haven't talked to you really, you know, in the last few months since the whole, you know, exodus, you know, organization went under. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But this was a Christian organization that was very proactive in aversion kinds of therapy and turning people from gay to straight. And, you know, they were very welcomed within the Christian community for so many years. And the leadership of that organization finally, you know, over this past summer, they closed the organization down after so many years and made an apology to the gay people, the man who was running it, was so apologetic because he himself had been gay, and he had suppressed these feelings all these years and telling people that, you know, you can do it too, and, you know, pushing them into something they couldn't be. We, even with people committing suicide over it because they felt that, you know, they were going to be, you know, damned if they do, damned if they don't. And they were so depressed from all this, you know, talk that you can do this, that they killed themselves. And they finally said themselves that, you know, when you're gay, you're gay. You just can't change it. Now, that doesn't mean you necessarily have to act on it, so they say. But you can't change somebody's sexual orientation. But I think that's something more recent than not as far as Christian thinking. Maybe you can address that.
Well, I'm not familiar with that, Bonnie, so I'm really kind of, you know, just be talking out in the dark and that sort of thing. But so it sounds like I need to go on the Internet and do a little bit of research on that and catch up with that. So,
well, there's been movements forever, you know, as far as the Christian community, you know, denouncing homosexuality. I'm sure you're aware of that, right?
Oh, right. Yes, yes, yes.
And that was never an accepted thing, you know, so, and people would say that you need to, you know, put those thoughts aside, you don't have to act on them. I mean, I think that was pretty much Christian thinking. When you were growing up, you know, did that come up?
Right. Well, see, when I grew up, I don't think I even knew the word, really. I was pretty naive life. I got married when I was 18, and I don't think I really knew the word until the feminist movement kind of got started in the early 70s, and all of a sudden we're hearing about lesbians, and that was kind of my first introduction to it. And then I think in the early 80s, Tim LaHaye came out with a book, The Unhappy Gays. I read that, and that was really the first time I really began to understand that some of those issues. But even in his book, he did not, I've gone back and looked at his book, and in his book he did not discuss that gays married straight women to hide. You know, he was, that was not the purpose of his book, and I don't even know if he knew that then or not. I mean, I just don't have any idea. But that issue did not even come up then for me. So I really was kind of in the dark and pretty naive until, maybe about 5 years ago, maybe when I ran into some of your material and started corresponding with you. So I've really been kind of, I've been teaching on the positive about marriage and sex, been teaching women how to enjoy vaginal orgasms for 40 years. And, you know, I've been just focused on this area of marriage. And so, and I've dealt a lot with sexual addicts and serial adulterers. And as I have gotten into your material, I have been amazed at the similarities between sexual addicts and serial adulterers and homosexuals, that their thinking toward women is very similar. They all become impotent usually later in marriage because that's not their primary, their wife is not their primary source of satisfaction, and they are having to perform to keep her happy, to keep her from leaving them, and eventually they reach an age of where they are emotionally exhausted and they can't pretend anymore. So I've kind of been fascinated by the parallels between these three groups. The main difference I see in them is that their object of lust is different.
And I just want to bring this up since I have you. I did email it to you about that Exodus International.
Okay, great.
And this came out June 20th of this year. And it says, Exodus International shuts down, leader apologizes. Yesterday afternoon, one of the biggest milestones in lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender history and the worldwide fight against homophobia was marked. The board of directors of Exodus International, the world's largest ministry, claiming to be able to, quote, cure homosexuality and turn gay men towards a heterosexual lifestyle, announced the ministry is shutting down. Writing on the official website, Alan Chambers, the president of Exodus International, publicly apologized to the gay community, saying he is deeply sorry for the pain and hurt caused to so many by his ministry's practices. proclaiming freedom from homosexuality since its creation in 1976. Exodus was an umbrella organization which grew to include over 120 local ministries in the United States and Canada, and over 150 ministries in 17 other countries, including the United Kingdom, France, and Australia. In April, John Polk, former chairman of Exodus, renounced his past involvement in the movement and expressed remorse for his actions. And here, do you mind if I read this letter so you just get a feeling for this?
Okay.
It says, to members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, I don't know what the Q is, community, in 1993, I caused a four-car pileup. In a hurry to get to a friend's house, I was driving when a bee started buzzing around the inside of my windshield. I hit the bee, and it fell on the dashboard. A minute later, it started buzzing again with a fury. Trying to swat it again, I completely missed the fact that a city bus had stopped three cars in front of me. I also missed that those three cars were stopping as well. Going 40 miles an hour, I slammed into the car in the front of me, causing a chain reaction. I was injured, and so were several others. I never intended for the accident to happen. I would have never knowingly hurt anyone, but I did. And it was my fault. In my rush to get to my destination, in fear of being stung by a silly bee and selfish distraction, I injured others. I have no idea of the people injured in that accident have suffered long-term effects. While I did not mean to hurt them, I did. The fact that my heart wasn't malicious and did not lessen the pain or their suffering. I am very sorry that I chose to be distracted that fall afternoon and that I caused so much damage to people and property. If I could take it all back, I absolutely would, but I cannot. I pray that everyone involved in the crash has been restored to health. Recently, I've begun thinking again about how to apologize to the people that have been hurt by Exodus International through an experience or by a message. I've heard many firsthand stories from people called ex-gay survivors. Stories of people who went to Exodus-affiliated ministries or ministers for help only to experience more trauma. I have heard stories of shame, sexual misconduct, and false hope. In every case that has been brought to my attention, there has been swift action resulting in the removal of these leaders and or these organizations. But rarely was there an apology or a public acknowledgement by me. And then there is the trauma that I have caused. There were several years I conveniently omitted my ongoing same-sex attractions. I was afraid to share them as readily and easily as I do today. They brought me tremendous shame, and I hid them in the hopes that they would go away. Looking back, it seems so odd that I thought I could do something to make them stop. Today, however, I accept these feelings as part of my life that will likely always be there. The days of feeling shame are over being human in a way that are long over, and I feel simply like accepting myself as my wife and family does, as my friends do, as God does. Never in a million years will I intentionally hurt another person, yet here I have sat, having hurt so many by failing to acknowledge the pain some affiliated with Exodus International caused, and by failing to share the whole truth about my own story. My good intentions matter very little and fail to diminish the pain and hurt others have experienced on my watch. The good that we have done at Exodus is overshadowed by all of this. Friends and critics alike have said it's not enough to simply change our message or website. I agree. I cannot simply move on and pretend that I've always been the friend that I long to be today. I understand why I'm distrusted and why Exodus is hated. Please know that I am deeply sorry. I'm sorry for the pain and hurt many of you have experienced. I am sorry that some of you who spent years working through the shame and guilt you felt when your attractions didn't change. I am sorry we promoted sexual orientation change efforts and reparative therapies about sexual orientation that stigmatized parents. I am sorry that there were times I didn't stand up to people publicly on my side who called you names like sodomite or worse. I am sorry that I, knowing some of you so well, failed to share publicly that the gay and lesbian people I know were every bit as capable as being amazing parents as the straight people that I know. I am sorry that when I celebrated a person coming to Christ and surrendering their sexuality to him, that I callously celebrated the end of relationships that broke your heart. I am sorry that I have communicated that you and your families are less than me and mine. More than anything, I am sorry that so many have interpreted this religious rejection by Christians as God's rejection. I am profoundly sorry that many of you have walked away from their faith and that some have chosen to end their lives. For the rest of my life, I will proclaim nothing but the whole truth of the gospel, one of grace, mercy, and open invitation to all who enter into an inseparable relationship with the Almighty God. I cannot apologize for my deeply held biblical beliefs about the boundaries I see in Scripture surrounding sex, but I will exercise my beliefs with great care and respect for those who do not share them. I cannot apologize for my beliefs about marriage, but I do not have any desire to fight you on your beliefs or the right that you seek. My beliefs about these things will never again interfere with God's command to love my neighbor as I love myself. You have never been my enemy. I am very sorry that I have been yours. I hope the changes in my own life, as well as the ones we announced tonight regarding Exodus International, will bring resolution and show that I am serious in both my regret and offer my friendship. I pledge that future endeavors will be focused on peace and common good. Moving forward, we will serve our pluralistic culture by hosting thoughtful and safe conversations about gender and sexuality, while partnering with others to reduce fear, inspire hope, and cultivate human flourishing. And that was his letter of apology.
Okay, wow. It was a pretty detailed letter, wasn't it?
Well, you know what? This organization had really done so much harm to people over the years, Patsy, because to make people feel that their life has no value and that God will only only turn on them. You know, it's so ingrained, you know, within their church bringing up that, you know, this is just such a sin. And my problem with the whole thing is that as long as gay people have to feel that they have to hide who they are, they're going to keep marrying women. And I was kind of hoping that in today's age where, you know, homosexuality is more accepted, some places accept gay marriages, that, you know, this situation would be changing. But it's really not, because of the fact that still and all, there are many people, like I say, within the church community who expect that you don't have to be gay if you just try hard enough. Do you see that changing at all in the church, that attitude?
Generally, no, I'm not seeing a change. Yeah. And I think a lot of times when parents know that about their kids, then they are pressuring them to get married also.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're, you know, they're concerned about their family name and family reputation and basically all they, you know, they're not thinking about the person they're marrying and what's going to happen to them and what's going to happen to their grandkids. They're just thinking about themselves and that they pressure their kids. You know, that if you want to have any inheritance from me or any kind of a relationship from me, then you need to get married. So,
right,
so
there's just no
so
room not to get married and not to be gay. I mean, so people went through terrible things. I mean, a lot of men used to go through shock treatment. They would hit their genitals with, you know, shocks when they would show them pictures that they had, you know, any kind of erection. And they thought that would stop it. I mean, and this is how a lot of people really went crazy from that.
Yeah, well, I can see how that would happen. So
I know that we have different points of view because, you know, once again, you still feel, I mean, I think you've acknowledged that some people could maybe be born gay, but you feel they have some control over that. Is that right or no?
Well, what I believe about sexual conduct in general, straight across the board, I don't care whether you're straight or gay, whether you're a sexual addict or a serial adulterer, I believe that our sexuality is learned and that as we learn it and what we're doing is imprinting our brain. And I do believe that real brain changes take place. What we do with our hand is affecting our brain. In fact, there is so much research now that is so fascinating that a lot of these universities are doing with the MRIs, the brain scans and such, that they are just learning so many things about sex in general, that it is a learned process is what I believe. And what we do is training our brain to react a certain way. Let me give you an example. This is a heterosexual example. Something that is real popular these days is vibrators. And there are some women that want their husbands to use vibrators on them. There's women who use vibrators on themselves in private. Using a vibrator is teaching your body a way to respond. And generally, these women who are into vibrators, they don't begin to have any idea what sex with a man is like, where you're just enjoying his body inside your body, having the sensations. What that vibrator does, it teaches your vagina to respond to a certain stimulation, so that then when you're with a man, you cannot feel the velvetiness of his skin. You just can't feel the wonderful sensation of your husband inside you because you have trained your vagina to respond to a vibrator. And a vibrator is not like a man. It is totally different. And really, it's impersonal. I don't care if the husband's doing it to his wife. It is impersonal. It's very different than a man making love to his wife. And in fact, there is so much of this kind of stuff going on that a lot of women think there is no such thing as a vaginal orgasm. They just think that's some kind of myth. There is a tremendous amount of physical evidence about the woman's anatomy that show the nerve endings, the blood supply, that a vaginal orgasm not only is something a woman is capable of doing, it's something, and I'm sure you believe this too, the number one sexual organ is the brain. And one thing I tell people, you know, there's an easy test you can do so that you can see this. And I tell them, I say, look at your hand. Hold your hand up and look at it. Now, think about the last time you were angry with your husband and he reached over and touched your hand. Now, if your hand did not jerk away from his hand, it's because you were trying not to show that anger and you were determined you weren't going to let him see how you felt. But your hand could not hardly stand for him to touch you. And then think about the last time you and your husband went out on a romantic dinner and he was saying sweet things to you and maybe brought you flowers and was telling you how beautiful you looked and how sweet you were, all those sort of things, and he reached over and he touched your hand. Then what happens is you have an electrical impulse that races up your arm, does a somersault to the bottom of your stomach, and then races back up your spine to sparkle out your eyes. You have a physical sensation. A woman who has learned to enjoy vaginal orgasms, her husband can reach over and touch her knee, and she will feel her vagina jump with joy and anticipation of her husband. She can just hear his voice, and her breasts will tingle at the thought of being with him because of her brain, because of the emotional relationship that they have built with each other. And so, and as I have been, you know, I've been teaching women how to enjoy a vaginal orgasm for 40 years. And I've had lots of women, I say, you don't have to tell me you did it, but you know what? They cannot resist telling me. They will call me up and say, Patsy, guess what? I did it. You are so right. And they'll say, you are so right. This is so wonderful. But Bonnie, I'll tell you something else about this. I have, and since I have become more aware of homosexuals married to straights, I have had several women, probably five women, so this is not some kind of great big scientific survey or anything like that. It's just a consistency I have seen with women who have told me that they are married to a man. Several of them were married to a man that they knew was a homosexual. Two of them were married to men who I would call serial adulterers. And what they've told me in their husbands blaming them for not wanting them sexually, they have learned how to enjoy a vaginal orgasm. And when a woman enjoys a vaginal orgasm, her response time is within a couple of seconds of her husband. She responds really fast. And so they've gone out and they've read the book.
The problem is,
pardon?
The problem with our women is they can't have vaginal orgasms.
Right, I understand that, but I'm going to bring this point to them. So I know a couple of women. You're breaking up, so I don't know if we're having
some problems.
Can you
hear me better now?
Yes, I can hear you better now.
Okay, see, the problem with when you have a gay husband, they don't want to have sex with you, period.
Right, I understand that. But they're blaming their wives, so the wives are out there learning how to be better lovers because they're believing the lie that, you know, you're not a good enough lover. One woman who was married to a gay, you and I have had this conversation, a lot of them are attracted to breasts, and that's all they're interested in. They're not interested in what's down below. But anyway, she went out and learned how to have a vaginal orgasm, and she says, guess what, honey? I'm a two-second gal now. I can respond really fast. You don't have to work so hard to get me turned on. And she thought that was going to solve their sex problems and their marriage problems. What it did was it made them worse. See, and you can believe that because these men don't want a woman who can respond better, who can respond quicker and more fully and enjoy a vaginal orgasm because they don't want to be there anyway. The man doesn't.
Right.
And so as these women have learned how to enjoy their full femininity and respond, they have been rejected even more by these men who are the serial adulterers and the homosexuals, because that's not the problem. The men are just blaming the wives and telling them, you know, if you just be a better lover, I'd want you. They're getting the blame off themselves, and I think you've used the expression before, they compartmentalize this. So that, you know, blaming their wife allows them to live with themselves, and they believe the lie, too. You know, it's something they're telling themselves. You know, if you kept the house better, if you did this better, well, we'd have a great sex life.
Well, the good news is that women can go out and they can get a good sex life after they leave their husbands.
Yes.
And that's the important thing that I think that women need to hear, the message from you, that even though you married in the church, and even though you made a vow that when you're married to a gay man, you didn't sign up for that, as Dr. Brian Hooper always says on our show.
Right.
No, that was
not
part of the deal. So
right.
Is that true?
That was not even considered, you know, when you made your vows, that you were making vows with a gay man. And, you know, Bonnie, you like to coin words and coin phrases, and I do too. And I have coined a new phrase that I think applies to this situation. I'm calling it fruit divorce. And I'm not using fruit as a slang word for gays. I'm not using it that way at all. I'm using it like Matthew 7:15-16 uses it, where Jesus says, you shall know them by their fruit. You shall know them by their deeds. And you asked me a question. It's been quite a few radio programs back that I am still working on. It's just making me look at things differently, and it's making things crystallize. You said, what about when a man is so inconsiderate he won't confess that he's gay? And a lot of these women think, well, they have to know that he's gay before they can scripturally divorce him. And the point I have begun to realize as I have wrestled with that is that the Bible recognizes fruit divorce, and especially in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And that is that certain marriages ended based on the fruit or the deeds of just one person, not evidence, not some PI that got a picture of them together, not some confession. And as I've been thinking about this, there's an Old Testament passage that nobody that I know of disputes, that they all understand one instance of it. And that's in Deuteronomy 22:13-21, where they talk about a man marries a woman and she finds no favor, and he accuses her of not being a virgin when he married her. So he takes her before the priests and such, and her parents come. And ideally, the parents are supposed to be able to present the bloody cloth from her wedding night to show that, yes, she was a virgin. He is slandering her and running her down, and it's all false. And if they can produce the bloody cloth, then he is fined, and he cannot divorce her for the rest of her life. And that marriage is valid before the people. But if her parents cannot produce that bloody cloth, then that husband, not only is that marriage ended, but the girl is then taken out and stoned because she played the harlot in her father's house. But I want you to think about something, Barney. Bonnie, there are six things that they do not know. All they know is the parents don't have this bloody cloth. They don't know who she had sex with. They don't know when she had sex. They don't know if she was raped or if she was a consenting partner. They don't know if she's masturbated and destroyed her hymen. They don't know how many times she's had sex or masturbated. All they knew was that she did not have this outward sign of a virgin. She did not have the fruit of a virgin, and that marriage ended based on that. Nobody disputes any of that. They don't have. They didn't have any PI photos, any confession. All they had was an absence of the proof that she was a virgin. They didn't know any of those things. Now, there's
another.
Well,
were there any exceptions to that, Patsy? Like, let's say there was a rape. I mean, did the woman have to be blamed for that?
No, there were laws for she was raped. And that's also a good question, Bonnie, because this is also what I call fruit evidence regarding sexual improper activity. In that same verse or chapter in Deuteronomy 22, down in verse 23, it says, if there's an engaged girl and a man finds her in the city and he lays with her, then they are to stone both the girl and the man because she was in the city, and if she had cried out, somebody would have heard her. But because nobody heard her cry out, they assume it was consensual sex, so they are both guilty. Then they say in verse 25, if a man finds her in the field and he has sex with her, only the man dies because they assume she cried out and no one heard her. So see, these are all examples here in Deuteronomy 22, passing judgment on another person sexually based on some certain deeds where we don't know the details. We don't have, except for maybe with the engaged girl, whether she was in the city or whether she was in the country, but they're assuming if it's in the city, she was consenting. If she's in the country, then they're assuming she cried out and she fought him, but he was stronger. This is what I call fruit evidence based on that person's deeds. And maybe I need to see if I can, I'm using fruit because that's a Bible word, a translated word there in Matthew 7, and maybe I need to try and find a better word so that people don't think I'm making a pun or a ridiculing or something like that, because I'm not. I'm trying to teach a basic principle.
I think that really, you know, is a very skewed way to look at life because, you know, I just helped somebody edit a book about their sister being raped, and you know, it was a very horrible book, you know, reading all the details. And, you know, the girl was paralyzed, and there was no way she could have screamed out. You know, so what would they make it, like she was guilty because she didn't scream out?
Well, I don't know. I think if she was paralyzed, that would be evidence that she had, it was not consensual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm just trying to illustrate a general principle. And what I wanted to apply to the situation we're talking about of straight women married to gay men is in Exodus 21, 7 through 11, where it talks about slave wives. And I've been doing a bunch of background reading for this verse. This is where a man gives his daughter, sells her to be a man's slave, and he marries her. And it says that even though she is a slave and he's bought her, he has to provide her food, her clothing, and her conjugal rights. He has to provide sex. And it says if he marries another woman, takes a second wife, he cannot reduce any of those things for his first wife. He has to continue providing her food, her clothing, and the same amount of sex for her, that the woman has those rights. And what I've been reading is that the Jews at that time and on up into, I see kind of different things, second, third, maybe fourth century after Jesus was here, people recognized that both men and women had the right to divorce because someone was what I call a sexual dud, was not there for the other person sexually. And what the Jews said was, by God making this law for a slave wife, the lowest class of woman at that time, then this privilege, trickled up is not the right word, but anyway, it went up. Free women, if a slave wife had this right to divorce her husband because he was not there for her sexually, then certainly a free wife did, and certainly a man did. And when they divorced them, this is another instance of where all you've just got the woman's word. This man is not there for me sexually. And you do not know, the wife did not necessarily know if he was having sex with someone else. If he'd gotten a second wife, she might know that. She didn't know if he was masturbating, if he was having sex with himself while visualizing someone else, if he was having sex with his other wives. I already said that. She didn't know if he hated her and he didn't want to have sex with her, if he's repulsed with sex with her. She didn't know if when he could force himself to have sex with her, he was visualizing her as a man, thus using her to commit adultery. All that she knew was that he was not manifesting the outward signs of a loving husband by having sex with her. And she could divorce him, and the history that I'm reading is telling me that this was a common cause of divorce in the Old Testament and in the first few centuries after Jesus was here. People accepted that was a legitimate reason for divorce. And so this, and I think there are some parallel passages in the New Testament along this line, and I wasn't going to take the time to talk about them in our call this evening because I felt like this, is plenty for us to talk about today. But back at this time, the Jews, the scribes, they wanted to control this. And so they readily recognized that if a man is not supporting his wife by giving her food and clothing, they would grant divorce real quickly. But they did not like giving divorce because there wasn't enough sex in the marriage. So they would find the woman where she's losing part of her dowry, and if she was withholding sex from her husband, if he was withholding sex from her, then they would fine him, thinking that finally the people would get so poor that they'd start having sex with each other. But, all that is doing your duty, and that's not very satisfying sex. But that was the way they looked at it. And, Bonnie, back in the Old Testament where Jesus, you probably know a whole lot more about this than I do, back where God gave the commandments regarding the Sabbath, that they were supposed to rest on the Sabbath, and the scribes and stuff, they couldn't just leave stuff alone. They kind of had to make their own little laws, and so they had a law was, well, if you go more than, I don't remember how much of a mile it was, then you're not really resting, so you need to stay home and be with your family and really rest. And so then the Jews would get around that by saying, well, I need to take a trip this Sunday. So they would go out earlier, go that however many part of a mile was considered traveling, and they would leave some clothing there. And they would do that until they got to wherever their destination was. And so they would start out on the Sabbath, and they would go how much of a mile it was, and they got there, they said, oh, look, there's my clothes. I must be home. I guess I can go that much further again. And they would get around it that way. And so the scribes, I don't think they had enough to do. They're so busy making all these laws. But they had the same kind of laws to decide how much sex was enough sex in marriage. So they, and it was all based on the man's occupation. They said if he was unemployed, he had to have sex every day. If he was a worker, he had to have sex 2 times a week. If he was an ass driver, he had to have sex 1 time a week, meaning that they were usually gone from home a week. If he was a camel driver, he only had to have sex 1 time in 30 days, meaning they were went on longer trips. If he was a sailor, he only had to have sex 1 time every 6 months. And if he was a scribe, then he only had to have sex once every 30 days. So so they gave themselves, you know, quite a bit of leeway. But
Well, getting back to today, Patsy, when, you know, we talk to women today, I think the important thing, the message I want Christian women to get from you is that you don't have to stay married to a man who can't be a husband to you.
Right.
And I really, in my heart, believe that sex is an important part and makes the difference between being somebody's brother and being somebody's lover.
Absolutely.
And that marriage wasn't meant to be with your brother. I mean, you don't marry your brother. So when people say, well, we're roommates, he's like my brother, I'm like a sister to him, that's all well and good, but that's not what marriage was intended to be. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And God has designed sex so that when husbands and wives are engaging in it, both of their bodies are releasing hormones that make them more loving towards each other, makes them more loving towards their children. And sex is really very important to God in a marriage. And he's just designed all these wonderful hormones to make them so that they're happy with each other, so that the woman walks with a spring in her step and the man is happy and easy to get along with. So there's everyday benefits. Sex is very important. It's just speaking of God. I call it speaking God's beautiful language of love that transcends words, that it's and so the point I'm trying to make with this Old Testament passage, Bonnie, is that gay women, you know, they say, well, what if he's so inconsiderate he will not confess that he's gay? What if he's so inconsiderate that he blames me for his lack of sexual desire? What I'm saying is that doesn't matter. What you know is that man is not there sexually. And, you know, in reading your books, a lot of these women would be tickled to death if they had sex once a month. I read in your newsletter today one lady talking about having it once every 3 years with him. And so these men, what she knows is he's not there for her sexually. She doesn't know who he's having sex with. And I tell women, if he's not having sex with you, he's having sex with somebody. And it may be himself. And if
right,
he's having
that's the other thing, and I don't know if you had a chance to see in my new terminology that I'm now using. It's called non-straight. Because, you know, I tell women this. You know, it doesn't have to be gay per se, if you don't want to say that word. I don't care if it's asexual, bisexual, confused sexual. You know, whatever the sexual is that's not heterosexual, and I just have to call it non-straight behavior. And
right.
Once you don't have to call it something or label it something other than not being straight, and I think that's where the dividing line has to be, that if a man isn't totally into you as a woman, then he's not a heterosexual man. And I don't have to say you have to call him gay. You just have to say he's non-straight, because that means that he has penis issues and that, you know, somewhere along the line that he can't relate to a woman and her body. And even if he's thinking about it, like some women say, well, we still have sex, and then their husbands tell me, yeah, but I had to fantasize about a man to do it. I mean, does that make you feel better about having sex that way? You know, I wouldn't feel better about that. I don't know how you would feel, but it certainly wouldn't make me feel better. Oh, yeah, my husband's still, you know, having sex with me. Yeah, but look what he's doing to have sex with you. Is that
right?
Is it worth it? I mean, I just don't get it.
Well, and you know, I read in your newsletter about the lady that said he won't cuddle with me. You know, a heterosexual man enjoys cuddling with a heterosexual woman, draping their legs over each other and snuggling with each other. You know, so it's not the same. And I think that is a great service you do for these women, Bonnie, in describing what heterosexual sex is like. It is not the same. It is the sex with a gay man is mechanical, I think, is one of the expressions you use. They don't view kissing like a heterosexual man does. You know, just
but you know what,
basic.
Patsy, there's a lot of men who are just have sexual hang-ups. And that's why I say, I don't care what they call themselves. They don't have to be even gay men. There are men who, you know, have all these emotional, you know, hang-ups about sex. And they don't want to make love to their wives. And, you know, they look at sex in a different way than they need to. And I tell women that if you can't have a husband, you know, or a mate who can sexually satisfy you, then you need to cut your losses and not feel guilty about it. Because there's something wrong with them. And that's not
right.
going to change. I mean, I wouldn't feel
right.
any better. And, you know, I hope nobody misunderstands me. I'm not knocking this. I just don't want to live with a cross-dresser. I mean, I don't want a man in my house who's going to be dressing up, wearing better clothes than I'm wearing, or
right.
getting stimulated by wearing women's clothes. Now, I'm
right.
not saying, I'm not condemning it. I'm just saying it's not for me. And I tell women, don't feel guilty if you don't want to live with this, because this is not a way to have to live. I mean, if it doesn't bother you and you're fine with it, because there are women who are, I'm just not. I mean, you don't have to feel guilty because you can't, you know, feel good about these things, right?
Right. And that's what I think this Old Testament verse is saying, Bonnie. If you're not satisfied as a woman, and the things you're talking about is not some weirdo thing some woman wants, it's just she wants a normal marriage, a normal man. And this verse was saying, hey, ladies, even if you're a slave and you don't have a husband who's willing to be there for you sexually, you've got the right to divorce him and move
mm-hmm.
on to marriage with a heterosexual man who is into women, who likes women, and enjoys the fact that you are a woman and celebrates the fact that you are a woman and that he's a man. And so this, to me, this is a basic principle of divorce from the Old Testament that is carried over into the New Testament, that if you're married to a sexual dud for whatever reason, you know, I don't care what reason it is either. You know, maybe he's into women, but one lady told me about her husband's mother was sexually inappropriate with him, doing things with him. And he had all kinds of hang-ups and inhibitions because of that. He wasn't into men. He was into women, but he was having a lot of problems functioning because of his mother's inappropriate activity with him. So, and what I recommended for her was that they both needed counseling to, you know, that's not something I have the ability to help them work through. But, you know, so you're right. Men have as many hang-ups as women do, and God does not trap women in miserable marriages. He just does not. He did not do it in the Old Testament. He does not do it in the New Testament.
Yeah, could you talk about that a little bit, that women do have, you know, scripturally the way out of that?
Well, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do, you know, here in showing this passage from the Old Testament, that that God has always recognized a woman, and the Jews recognized that women had as much sexual desire as a man has. And in 1 Corinthians 7, where it talks about, Paul is talking about, it's his compatibility law. Let me get over there in my Bible. about that a man needs a woman to satisfy his needs and a woman needs a man to satisfy her needs. There is absolutely no difference between the needs of a man and a woman. And the Jews generally, and you and I have talked about this before, that Jewish women just do not have the hang-ups that Christian women do, because they come from a pretty healthy heritage of recognizing that God gave sex and that it's pure and it's good, and that's one way you can honor God is by, and you and I have talked about, you prepare for the Sabbath by having great sex, so to worship
mm-hmm.
God by having great sex. And
mm-hmm.
So anyway, in 1 Corinthians 7, beginning in verse 1 through about verse 5, he's talking about men and women have exactly the same sexual needs that the other one has. And it's a sin for a man to deny his woman, his wife, sexual satisfaction, just as it is a sin for a woman to deny her husband satisfaction. It takes a man to satisfy a woman and a woman to satisfy a man. And he says, stop, in verse 5, stop depriving one another except by agreement. And I'm taking that to be something bad has happened and you're needing to take care of it. He says, so you may devote yourself to prayer and come back together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So in the New Testament, God does not make any distinction between their desires. And then as you continue on through this verse, what I would use for a woman today is down in verse 13, where it says, and a woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified. That means he's set apart. He is living a lot better life because she's a Christian than he would be living married to some pagan woman.
Mm-hmm.
Sanctified through his wife, and his unbelieving wife is sanctified through him. What that verse is assuming is that that wife is living as a Christian, and as living as a Christian, she has a right to expect to be sexually satisfied in marriage. Even if her husband is not a Christian, she has a right as a child of God to expect that husband to satisfy her sexually. And if he's not having sex with her, I'm going to say it again, he's having sex with somebody. And it may be himself. He may be masturbating, thinking of some man, or he may be thinking of some woman. I don't care who or what he's thinking about. He's not having sex with her. And she has the right to make demands on him, just like this slave girl in the Old Testament. I see a direct parallel between that slave girl and this wife. If you can't act like a husband with me, then hit the road, Charlie.
Well, I think that's some really good advice, you know, Patsy, and I think that people can learn so much from you, I mean, especially Christian women, because when you go to your website, you have so much information there. And let's talk a little bit about your website, because you
okay.
have your newsletter, Embarrass the Alligator, right?
Right, and that's at embarrassthealligator.com. And your listeners can go to the Ask Patsy Ray feature on
Patsy
there.
But they can go to your website and get that, right?
Yes, if they go to embarrasstheAlligator.com, they can get my newsletters, and they can see the last newsletter where I talked about by their fruit you shall know them, trying to establish this principle. We don't have to know who he's having sex with. God has never required us to hire a private investigator to go out and take pictures and get him in the act. I've had wives tell me that their husband tells them, you can never divorce me because you will never catch me in adultery. Well,
mm-hmm.
fooey on him. God does not require the wife to catch him in adultery. All God requires is her to say, the man is a sexual dud. He is not having sex with me. Therefore, I can draw certain conclusions about him. Just like they drew certain conclusions about the virgins, and about the women who were raped, whether it was consensual or raped, and where the slave wife was granted the right to divorce her husband because he was not there for her sexually. And that is the way I see this this chapter in 1 Corinthians 7. The word, if the word, let me find it here. The leaves all the way through here, like in verse 15. That is the standard word for divorce that you find in Matthew 19 and Matthew 5. It is talking about scriptural divorce. And God says in verse 16, "For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife?" And up above that, he says, God, he says, you're not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. God has not called us to endure miserable marriages. Mm-hmm. He has called us to peace. And if this man or this woman refuses to be a sexual partner, we have the right to divorce them, just like the slave girl had the right to divorce her husband because he was not there for her sexually.
Patsy, I want to bring up to our listeners, because we're almost at the end here, that you can go to Patsy's website at patsyraydawson.com. That's PatsyRaeDawson.com. Of course, you can find her as a resource on my website at gayhusbands.com. You'll see Patsy there. And if you go on her website, you know, she has so many great things that you can read and books, audio books that you can buy. You can sign up there for Embarrass the Alligator, right?
Right.
There's a little.
Yes.
A little icon on the right-hand side with this scary-looking alligator where you can click in. And
And they go to the If they go to the bookshelf, I've got a free booklet there on why Christians make the best lovers, and it starts off talking about 8 reasons that God designed sex for His people. Sex is a very important part of marriage to God, And for these husbands and wives who deny their husbands sexual satisfaction, to downplay it and to beat the other one up, there's something wrong with you because I don't want to have sex with you. Well, you shouldn't have got married in the first place, because that's an important part of marriage. The hormones actually, some of these new researchers that don't even talk about the Bible, they're just talking about the way the hormones work. They say these hormones cement a man and a woman together. When they're having sex, they are just cementing their emotions and their minds together. And some of these words are so similar to there in Genesis when God created man and woman and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. That word cleave means to stick like glue. And that is exactly the way these researchers, these neuroscientists, describe these hormones. They cement you like glue, and they use that as an example. God knew what He was doing when He designed sex. He did not make a mistake.
Well, we're going to leave you with those powerful words. Sex is great. God is good. I mean, what can you say?
Yes. Yes.
And if you're not being satisfied at home, certainly for gay, we know that story, but I have women writing to me with all kinds of issues, whether it's sexual addictions, cross-dressing, fetishes. I mean, this is not what making love is supposed to be.
Right.
This is outside the realm of any kind of normalcy. And it's not making a judgment on anyone, but you shouldn't be judged either as a woman because you don't want to do it.
Right.
And you don't have to do it. And it's abnormal behavior, and it's enough of a reason not to be with someone. So start making an exit plan, as I tell my women. Get ready to exit left and get on the move. So, Patsy, I want to thank you so much for being on here. It's always so enlightening, and I always love listening to you, to your sex talk, because you're so open and honest about it. Well, you know, it's always good to hear it, especially coming out of a Christian woman, I always say.
Okay.
You know, like I said, it makes its point, and I hopefully can give us an update. as always, and go to Patsy Ray Dawson. How's your show doing?
Well, I'm going to be on this Wednesday at 2:30 Central Standard Time with Oscar Miles. Thursday. And we're going to be talking about why having a wonderful love life is so important for raising teenagers this Thursday. Teenagers absolutely need a mother and dad who are having lots of good sex and and releasing lots of good hormones of love. And I think a lot of reasons that parents have problems with their teenagers is because one parent in that relationship is a sexual dud. You know, Bonnie, a lot of people say, oh, but my husband is such a wonderful parent. Oh, my wife is such a wonderful parent. My only complaint is that they are not there sexually. And I'll tell you what, I don't believe it. I am talking to too many of their grown kids, and their grown kids are just absolutely turned off of Christianity because of growing up in a supposedly Christian home where one parent does not love the other one sexually, and the kids suffer. They are not treated right in those marriages. I don't care what anybody says. I'm talking to their kids, and their kids don't believe it either.
Well, that's why I tell our women, you know, we have a group now for adult children of gay fathers, and, you know, it's a wonderful thing that I'm learning more and more now, you know, that we have the group going, about the hardships that children have as they go into their own relationships as adults on having a jaded view of what a relationship should be based on what they've seen at home.
Right.
And it makes it all the more powerful of why women need to get out of these marriages. They need to be role models to their children and show them that this is not acceptable behavior and this is not how a loving couple is supposed to respond. And, you know, so I agree with you. Maybe next time we can do a show about that. That would be great.
Okay. That would, because I'm eager to hear.
Talk about the children and the issues that are coming up.
Yes,
and we can talk about that.
Yes, I'm eager to hear some of the insights
you're
getting.
Yeah, I'll be more than happy to tell you all of them. And you can take a look, you know, on my website at gayhusbands.com. I now have a tab called Our Children.
Okay.
For anyone who's listening, and it's for the adult children, and it talks about all the issues they're going through. And that's why we have a support room, we have a chat room, we have a Yahoo page now, run by a wonderful young man, Jason, who, you know, is like a spokesman for our group, and he really is wonderful. But, you know, like I say, if you have children who are 18 and over who are having issues and need support, this is a group of young people supporting other young people, talking about what they're going through and the hardships they're finding. And when you read that page on gayhusbands.com of Our Children and you see, it'll be very eye-opening. So we'll be talking more about children in our future.
Okay.
Now, I've given you a lot
good.
To think about, Patsy, a lot of stuff to read.
Right.
You had to come here and get homework from me on top of it all, on top of your busy life. But I really appreciate your being here.
Well,
and
you
know,
stimulate
I love
my
you.
Thinking. So, yes, I love you too, Bonnie. So, appreciate the opportunity.
Good, and we'll talk again in the wintertime, okay? We'll have you back.
Okay, sounds great. Okay, sounds good.
All right,
good.
Take care. Good night,
Thank
everybody.
You
have
too.
A great night.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.